I am Javidra Bonner, and I am a chemistry undergraduate student representing the College of Science at George Mason University. And my collaborators are Nicole Thompson, who will be presenting right after me, Dr. Philip Duncan, and Dr. Louis L. Ricksanti. And today we'll be talking about utilizing family history for familial dilated cardiomyopathy. And there are no relationships to disclose. Familial dilated cardiomyopathy is a genetic disorder that's characterized by the ventricles of the heart being dilated, kind of like a balloon. And family history collection and interpretation, as well as genetic testing, should be essential in the diagnosis, the management, the treatment, et cetera, for FDC. The results of these tests may motivate family members to engage in healthy behaviors, such as seeking earlier screening for FDC and following a healthy lifestyle. And with the data that we get from, you know, the family history collection, we'll be able to catch the disease faster. So what is cardiomyopathy? A cardiomyopathy is a disease of the heart muscle, and it usually leads to the heart's inability to contract. So usually heart failure, arrhythmia, and other, you know, diseases, sudden death, can be a result of the cardiomyopathies. And currently there are three types that are, you know, represented: hypertrophic, restrictive, and dilated. And today we'll be talking about dilated. Genetics accounts for about 30 to 50% of DCM, and the base criteria for FDC eligibility, which is familial dilated cardiomyopathy, is to have one first-degree relative with an unexplained sudden death under the age of 35 years, or one or more relatives that have been clinically diagnosed with DCM. So it just takes one person. You don't need three, you don't need five, you just need one other relative, and you could be eligible to have the test. FDC usually does have an autosomal dominant mode of inheritance, but there have been cases that are autosomal recessive and X-linked, and recently they found a couple that are also Y. So here's a normal heart versus a DCM heart. Your normal heart is the size of your fist if you ball it up. In the chambers, they relax and fill, and they contract and pump as normal, like a, you know, regular heart does. And as you can see, the left ventricles and the right ventricles are relatively the same size. They're kind of equal in size. The heart that suffers from DCM, the muscle fibers are stretched, the heart chambers are enlarged, and as stated before, it just kind of looks like a balloon that's been stretched too far. And usually, the left ventricle is the one that is, you know, dilated too much, but sometimes the right ventricle can be dilated as well. Currently, there are 18 genes that are associated with sudden cardiac death, which is one of the symptoms that people often overlook for this disease, usually because sudden death or death at all is usually an end-all, be-all. You know, with cancer, you know, it's like a stage process, and at the end stage, you die. But this is, unfortunately, one of the first symptoms that, you know, shows up, and what can you do at that point? So, yeah, these are just the genes that are associated with the sudden cardiac death. And, you know, lamin and myosin, troponin, and like the following, they are related to the anatomy and the physiology of the heart. So for our methods, we took a comprehensive family history from a proband at risk for FDC, and it was collected and analyzed by a genetic counselor. And the genetic counselor assisted in identifying who would be the best candidate for the DCM genetic testing. And right now, the test, they test for 27 genes associated with the entire disease, but among the 27, they test for all 18. So we have to pick the one that is best, the best candidate, because you have to do a whole panel screening at first, because they could have multiple gene mutations in one family, and you want to be able to pick all of them up. The risk for the unaffected members and the children was also calculated, and then the actions of the family members regarding their FDC predisposition were observed, recorded, and analyzed. Here's a physical representation of the family. So as you can see, it's an African-American family. A couple of them are overweight, but they were not overweight at the time of, you know, doing when this stuff presented, because some of the people in the picture have been clinically diagnosed. And it just looks like a regular family that you see walking down the street. You wouldn't know at all that something was wrong. Here's the pedigree that was generated. It's a little blurry, but as you guys know, the circles are females and the squares are men. You can't see it there, but a lot of the members in the third generation died in their 20s. The youngest person on this pedigree died at 16. And so the women that died in their 20s, you know, they had a lot of children, and the men that died were like hard laborers, and all that stuff can put stress on your heart. So yes, chronic stress is a factor in this. And like I said, the females died in the second decade of life. they had undergone stresses of pregnancy. There's a subset of this disease called PPCM, which is peripartum cardiomyopathy, and it only presents when you're pregnant. But if you keep getting pregnant, your body really never has time to heal, and then the actual DCM will like come in and set in. And the males that died in the second decade of life suffered from abnormal sleep patterns. They most of them worked graveyard shift, and they also did manual labor, working in factories, all things that, you know, will put stress on your heart. The 16-year-old male that died, he was a quarterback. So, you know, we know the game of football, it had increased stress on the body. And none of the family members were smokers, drinkers, or obese. And usually that's like one of the first signs that maybe it's something genetic if, you know, you have this condition that's running through a family, but nobody has the typical risk factors. Various family members had actually chosen to adopt to prevent the transmission of a bad heart, but they didn't really know what the bad heart was. They just knew that everyone in their family was dying. The results, so this case is autosomal dominant, well, this particular case study, and there are affected members in generations 1 through 4, and the expressivity was heightened in the 2nd, 4th, and 5th decades, which basically means that most of the symptoms popped up in their 20s, their 40s, or their 50s. And family members in the 4th and 5th generations, they currently play sports, which is a red flag. And there may be members in generation 5 that are affected, but they're asymptomatic. So that's why, you know, it didn't show up. And because of that, molecular genetic testing is needed to identify all the family members at risk, because the little kids that are playing, you know, football and playing all these sports, they may be asymptomatic, but that doesn't mean they don't have the mutation. And with sudden death being a first symptom, they need to know ahead of time if they do have the mutation. The proband has been tested, and his results are pending right now to exactly what gene mutations are on the panel. Here we have just a pie chart of the causes of death in generations 1 through 4. Generation 5 was not included because they're also young right now and they're asymptomatic, but we're hoping to make this a longitudinal study so that we'll be able to see what happens in that generation and in the generations to come. About 56% died of suspected heart attack, and we say suspected because when talking to the family, everyone just assumed that all these people that kind of like dropped dead were just dying of heart attack, but that's not the truth. They actually, their hearts just stopped. And, you know, we all know that you can live from a heart attack, but you cannot live from sudden death. 35% died from other, you know, whether it be accidental or murder, you know, things that were not related to this disease. And then 9% have been clinically diagnosed with DCM. So here we have a few questions that you could, like, ask yourself to see if you could be eligible for genetic testing or just to even see a genetic counselor about the situation. Has anyone in your family ever had a diagnosis of cardiomyopathy or heart disease? Has anyone ever seen a cardiologist or had any tests done on their heart, whether it be an MRI, an ECG, an EKG, any type of test like that, a stress test? Has anyone been told they have an enlarged or big heart? Or has anyone had a heart attack or heart failure? Has anyone died suddenly or had an unexplained death or accident, whether it be drowning, a car accident? Not necessarily, you know, a car accident where somebody hits you, but if you have this, somebody just, you know, wears off the side of the road and they don't know what happened, that could be, you know, a sudden death type of attack or a heart attack. Has anyone died at a young age or prematurely and it's unexplained? Anyone fainted, had problems with the rhythm of their heart, whether it be a racing heart or a heart murmur? Has anyone had a pacemaker or taken medication for their heart? And we actually have to ask all of these questions because, you know, sometimes if you say, has anyone had heart disease, a lot of family members we found out will say, oh, well, nobody in my family had heart disease. But then you have 10 people that, you know, had a heart attack, or 10 people that, you know, had like hypertension. So heart disease sometimes is too big of an umbrella, and people think if it's not this diagnosis of, you know, DCM or something, that they're good to go. But it's deeper than that. In conclusion, the family history collection and interpretation, as well as your genetic testing, it should be an essential part of cardiac diagnosis, management, and treatment, as you can see, just to catch these cases earlier, to save the little ones' lives, and just, you know, help the families plan better, whether they want to adopt or whether they want to just tell their children, you know, what's going on, and try to get the families to open up more about talking about their family history. We also need a proper understanding of the collection. So after you get the data, what do you do with it? It's needed to accurately proceed with the next step of genetic testing and management. And these results from these tests may motivate family members to engage in healthy behaviors, such as seeking, you know, earlier screening for FDC and following a healthy lifestyle. Currently, if we could have like a perfect world, there'd be with the athletes specifically, with their physicals, they could, you know, have a a required EKG or something, because it is unfortunate that this one of the first symptoms is sudden death. So, you know, we do kind of need to know if they do have these mutations. But with that, you know, with testing all the athletes for, you know, genetic testing and everything, and for these gene mutations comes, you know, insurance issues and, you know, opening a can of worms and whatnot. So it's like right now we're dealing with ethical issues of how to get these boys to be tested and get all of the family members to be tested. And here are my references. Any questions? Yes.
I wonder if a clinical workup suspicion is necessary before the genetic testing. The reason I say that is because there's another category of ion channelopathies, which also involves genetic testing, but it's a different direction entirely.
I think some of the family members, it's strange because usually when you go to your general practitioner, they don't know what to ask, they don't catch this. So one of the issues is we have to get to a cardiologist for them to start, you know, realize that, okay, maybe we do need to put surveillance on this patient. But how many people really ever get to the cardiologist if they don't know anything is wrong? So we're trying to get it kind of lower to the general practitioner so that maybe they can start the surveillance earlier and it's needed. But yeah, any more questions? Yes. Oh, it's fine.
So, is there data available to show us, like, how much longer the patients live after with early diagnosis? And also, once a person has been diagnosed with having that gene, does that put undue stress on them and becomes a severe stress and
shortage? Sometimes. With any type of mutation that you find out, you know, you find out anything is wrong, whether it be with cancer or with, you know, heart disease, it does, you know, for some people it does put a sense of stress, but other people it kind of relieves their stress because at least now they know what's going on and they can properly, you know, do the proper management. And what we're trying to do, because it's a longitudinal study, we are going to, you know, track to see if their lives are longer, you know, and I'm sure there's other case studies out there, but we're trying to compile all that data to see if they, knowing, like, saves their lives or, you know, makes their lives longer. So that's it. Thank you.